This is Audible Kids.
Skullduggery Pleasant by Derek Landy. Read by Rupert Degas. Chapter 16. What's in a Name? Stephanie soaked her elbow in the sink. She'd broken off a piece of the rock Tanith Lowe had given her and dissolved it in the water, filling the sink with bubbles and the library's restroom with a pungent odor. Whatever the rock was, it was doing its job. The bruises on her arms were fading. She dried herself with a spotless white towel, let the water gurgle into the drain, and allowed herself to sag against the wall. Her body may have been tired, but her mind was alert and racing, surging with anger. She was still furious at herself for being unable to disobey China's instruction. How could China have done that to her, to Skullduggery, after he had trusted her? No, she reminded herself. He hadn't trusted her. That had been Stephanie's mistake, not his. And because she went to China before the elders, or even Ghastly, now it could be too late to do anything. And it was all her fault. What had Tanith Lowe called Stephanie? A warrior? That was laughable. No matter what Tanith had thought she had seen in her, she was wrong. There was nothing warrior-like about her. She ran straight into trouble without thinking, without one moment of hesitation. Not because she was brave or heroic, but because she was stupid. Because she didn't want to be left out, because she didn't want to wait. She didn't have a plan, she didn't have a tactic, all she had was a penchant for raising Cain. It came to her then. Her eyes widened, and she stood up straight, a new strength coursing through her limbs. And just like that, China's command over her was broken. She needed Ghastly. She didn't really know where he lived, so she needed his address, and there was only one way she could think of to get it. She left the restroom, passing the window, realizing that it was morning already. She crossed the hall to China's apartment and knocked. No answer. She knocked again. China wasn't in. Stephanie looked at the door. Nothing special about it. She hadn't noticed anything unusual about it on the other side either, no chains or bolts or extra locks. There could be a locking spell placed on it, and if there was, then she'd be wasting her time. But she didn't think there was. Skullduggery had said a locking spell needed to be dismantled every time a door was opened, then cast again. She doubted China would have the patience to do that on a daily basis. Stephanie took a step back. An ordinary door. An ordinary, flimsy door. It was possible. She knew it was possible. She was tall and strong. This door was all that stood between her and saving Skullduggery. She had strong legs. Her legs were muscled. A swimmer's legs. They were strong. The door was weak. She could do it. She had to do it. She had to save her friend. Her boots slammed against the door. She kicked again. And again. And again. Her legs were strong, she couldn't fail, desperation lent her strength. The door was weak and it burst open. She hurried in, moving right for where she had seen the address book. It wasn't there. It wasn't on the small table. Where was it? She looked around. China had moved it. Where? Why? Had she known Stephanie would be looking for it? No, there was no way she could have predicted that. Then she had moved it for some other reason, some other ordinary, average reason. She'd put it away. She'd put it back. Yes, she had put it back in its usual place. Where would China keep an address book? Stephanie went to the desk, opening the drawers and rifling through them. Papers, letters, no address book. She turned, eyes scouring the room, aware that China could walk through that broken door at any time. She went to the shelves. No address book. Where? She moved into the bedroom. There, on the bedside table, the address book. She snatched it up, finding the B's, her finger moving down the page. Bespoke Tailors. She memorized the address, dropped the book on the bed, and turned to go.
"Hello, dear," China said.
She walked in and Stephanie stepped back, wary.
"I saw your handiwork outside," China said. "What did my poor door ever do to you? Did you break anything else while you were here? A vase? A teacup, perhaps?"
"Just the door."
"Ah, well, I suppose I should be thankful for small mercies. Did you find what you were looking for, child?"
Stephanie tightened her fist.
"Don't call me that."
China laughed.
"That look in your eye is almost scary.
Have you done anything to help Skullduggery, or are you still too busy helping yourself?" asked Stephanie.
"He inspires loyalty, doesn't he?"
China said, an eyebrow raised.
"You can't be around our Mr. Pleasant without liking him, without wanting to fight alongside him. You should have been there during the war, you know. You should have seen him then."
"I just can't understand how you'd betray him like this." For the first time since she'd known her, China's eyes turned cold.
"I haven't betrayed him, child. I may have failed him, but I haven't betrayed him. To betray is to act against. I just haven't acted at all."
"Whatever,"
Stephanie said.
"Not interested in semantics?"
China asked, her smile returning.
"But of course not. You're a straightforward kind of girl, aren't you?"
"I'm leaving now,"
Stephanie said as she headed for the door.
"Straightforward,"
China continued.
"But not too bright. Stephanie, would you be a dear and stop?"
Stephanie stopped.
"I admire your courage, child, I really do. But rallying a cavalry to go after Skullduggery is just too risky. Too much could go wrong. Now sit in the corner there like a good little girl."
Stephanie nodded and walked for the door.
"Stop!"
China ordered.
"I said the corner!"
Stephanie reached the door and looked back. China was frowning.
"I don't understand. How are you able to do this? Stephanie, answer me!"
"I'm not Stephanie,"
Stephanie answered.
"And if you want to keep me here, then you'd better be ready to kill me."
China's frown disappeared.
"I don't want to kill you, my dear," she said, and a hint of a smile appeared. "So, you finally chosen a name?"
"Yeah, and I'm leaving. Right now."
"Maybe you stand some chance after all. Before you go, will you do me the honor of introducing yourself?"
"Of course,"
Stephanie said right before she walked out of the apartment.
"My name is Valkyrie Kane."
Gastly opened the door, saw Stephanie and nodded.
"I'm sorry if I upset you yesterday," he said. "I realize I have no right to tell you what you can and cannot do, but please believe that I was acting in your best."
"They have Skullduggery,"
Stephanie said, interrupting him.
"What?"
"Serpine has him. Last night he came in with his paper men, and they attacked him and took him away with them. We need to tell the elders."
Gastly tried a smile to see if she'd return it, to see if she'd admit her joke. Stephanie didn't smile back.
"You don't know if I should be involved in any of this," she said. "That's fine. That's your opinion, and that's fine. But let's forget about opinion. Let's look at facts. Serpine has Skullduggery. He's broken the truce. He believes the scepter is real, and he has proved that he's willing to kill to get to it. He has to be stopped, and I need your help to stop him."
"You saw this? You actually saw Serpine do this?"
"I was there."
He looked at her and nodded.
"Then I suppose it's a very good thing you decided to stick around."
Gastly brought his car around and Stephanie told him exactly what had happened as they sped through the streets to the sanctuary. The windows were heavily tinted, but even so he had a scarf wrapped around his face and a hat pulled low over his eyes. The Waxworks Museum hadn't opened yet, so they let themselves in the back and hurried through the darkness. Gastly searched the darkened wall for the switch, found it, and the wall parted. Stephanie was the first to reach the bottom of the stairs, and she strode into the sanctuary. The administrator hurried up to her, frowning.
I'm sorry, he said. You do not have an appointment.
We're here to see Meritorious.
The elders cannot be disturbed, the administrator insisted. I must ask you to leave at once.
It's an emergency,
Ghastly said as he joined her, but the administrator still shook his head.
All requests to visit the elders must go through the proper channels, he said.
But Stephanie had heard enough. She barged past him, heading for the corridor. Suddenly there was a flash of grey and a cleaver was before her, holding the blade of his scythe to her throat. Stephanie froze. There was movement all around her, sound all around her, and the only still things in her world were herself and the cleaver. She could hear Ghastly threatening the administrator, threatening the cleavers, and the administrator protesting and insisting they leave. Ghastly's voice was rising, becoming angry, telling the cleaver to lower the weapon, but the cleaver was still and silent, a statue. Stephanie could see her burnished reflection in his visor. She didn't dare move. Before the situation could spiral out of control, before Stephanie's head became separated from her body, the administrator gave in and agreed to ask Meritorious if he would receive visitors. At a nod, the cleaver stepped back and swung the scythe down by his side and behind him, making the mere sheathing of the weapon into an art form. Stephanie backed off, moving slowly, but the cleaver had gone back to his post like nothing had happened. They stayed in the foyer while the administrator hurried off, and presently they heard footsteps approaching. Eichen Meritorious entered, and looked mildly surprised when he laid eyes on Ghastly.
Mr. Bespoke,
he said, coming forward.
Will wonders never cease?
Grand Mage,
Ghastly said as they shook hands.
You've already met Valkyrie Kane, I think.
So you chose a name after all.
Meritorious said with a slightly disapproving look.
I hope you or Mr. Pleasant knows what he's doing.
Skullduggery's been captured, Stephanie blurted out. Serpine has him.
Not this again.
It's true,
Ghastly said. Meritorious peered at him.
You saw it yourself?
Well,
Ghastly said, hesitating.
No, but...
Meritorious waved his hand.
Skullduggery Pleasant is an excellent detective, and we value his help and his expertise on many difficult cases. But when it comes to Nefarian Serpine, he does not have his usual detached perspective.
Serpine has captured him,
Stephanie insisted.
My dear, I like you, and I can see why Skullduggery likes you. You are a frighteningly upfront person, and this is a quality to be admired. However, you are new to our culture and our ways, and you have heard a decidedly skewed version of our history. Serpine is not the villain he once was.
I was there, Stephanie said, struggling to remain calm. Serpine came with his paper creatures and they took him.
This made Meritorious pause.
Paper creatures?
Well, it looked like they were made out of paper.
He nodded slowly.
Hollow men, minions of Serpine, terrible things bloated by stink and evil.
Now do you believe me? We need to get him back.
Grand Mage,
Ghastly said.
My friend is in danger. I know you don't want it to be true, but the truce has been broken. Serpine and the sorcerers allied with him will waste no time in seizing power. The elders must act now.
On what authority?
Meritorious asked.
On the word of a girl I barely know.
I'm not lying, said Stephanie.
But you may be mistaken.
I'm not. Serpine wants the scepter and he thinks Skullduggery can get it for him.
The scepter is a fairy tale.
The scepter is real, Stephanie said, cutting him off. It's real enough that Serpine is after it, and he killed the two men you had spying on him so that you wouldn't find out about it until it was too late.
Meritorious hesitated for a moment.
Miss Kane, if you're wrong, and we move against Serpine now, then we are starting a war we are not ready for.
I'm sorry,
Stephanie said, seeing the trepidation in the elder's eyes and speaking softly now.
But the war has already started.
The paperclip lay on the tabletop and didn't move. Stephanie focused, flexed her fingers, and then thrust her palm towards it, trying to genuinely believe that thin air was nothing more than interlocking objects. The paperclip still didn't move. She nudged it, just to make sure it wasn't stuck or anything. Ghastly entered the room.
"We're ready to go," he said. "You sure you want to do this?"
"Very sure."
She put the paperclip in her pocket and nodded to the door behind him.
"Is there an army out there?"
Not quite."
"How many?"
He hesitated.
"Two."
"Two? He has an army of cleavers and he gives us two?"
"Sending any more would arouse suspicion,"
Ghastly said.
"Meritorious needs a little time to contact Morwenna Crow and Sagacious Tome and convince them that action is necessary. And until he does, this rescue mission is strictly unofficial."
"Please tell me they're as good as Skullduggery said they are."
"Both their uniforms and their scythes can ward off the majority of magical attacks, and there aren't many deadlier in close combat."
"Close combat?"
Stephanie said with a frown.
"What about throwing fireballs and stuff? Are they elementals or adepts?"
Ghastly cleared his throat.
"Neither, actually. Magic corrupts certain people, and cleavers need to be seen as completely impartial, so..."
"So they're not magic? At all?"
"They have some magic, but it just adds to their combat abilities. They're quite strong and very fast."
"So what are they going to do? Run around Serpine until he gets dizzy and falls over?"
"If it all goes according to plan, Serpine won't even know we're there."
"And what are the chances of that happening?"
Ghastly looked at her, and for a moment he held his ground. Then he looked away.
"They're not great,"
he admitted.
"Exactly."
He looked up again.
"But Mr. Bliss has offered us his help."
"He's coming?"
Stephanie asked nervously. She didn't like the idea of going anywhere with Mr. Bliss.
"Not him,"
Ghastly said.
"But he's sending someone. 5 is a good number. We can sneak in, grab Skullduggery, sneak out. Simple."
The door opened behind them and Meritorious appeared.
"I have arranged your transport,"
he said. They followed him up out of the sanctuary and exited the waxworks from the back, where a large van was parked. As soon as Meritorious emerged into the sunlight, 2 cleavers walked forward. They took the scythes from their sheaths before they climbed in. Stephanie hoped the van didn't go over any potholes, or she'd be skewered before they even reached Serpine's castle. Another person walked forward, a person she recognized from the library.
"Tanith Low,"
Meritorious said.
"This is Ghastly Bespoke, and Valkyrie Kane."
"We've met,"
Tanith said, giving Stephanie a polite nod. She carried a sword in a black scabbard, its lacquered surface crisscrossed with nicks and marks.
"Mr. Bliss sent you?"
Ghastly asked.
"He did. He thought I could be of use."
"That's quite a recommendation."
"He just wants this business to be over with as soon as possible,"
Tanith said.
"I'm at your disposal for the duration."
"Then let's go."
Tanith climbed into the van, and Ghastly got behind the wheel.
"Good luck,"
Meritorious said, as Stephanie was about to join them.
"Thank you."
He shrugged.
"You'll need it."
Chapter 17. A Fabulous Rescue Indeed. The rescue team stood by the side of the road and looked up at the wall surrounding Serpine's land. It was maybe 3 times as tall as Stephanie. Beyond it lay woodland, and beyond that, the castle. It occurred to Stephanie that if they didn't get Skullduggery back, it was all over. Serpine would get the scepter, and the Faceless Ones would return. The fate of the entire planet rested on the shoulders of a skeleton and the 5 people sent to rescue him.
"What if we do go up against Serpine?"
Stephanie asked, fighting to keep the dread out of her voice. She had to remain strong. She couldn't let them see that she was just an ordinary 12-year-old.
"What if we can't just get in and get out without anyone noticing? Do we have a plan if we have to face him?"
"Oh,"
Ghastly said, considering it.
No, not really. I'm going to try and cut him with my sword, Tanith said helpfully.
Right, Stephanie said. Excellent. What about guards? Do you think they'll be expecting us?
Serpine is used to the elders taking forever to make their calm, thought-out decisions, Tanith said. So he won't be expecting anything as amazingly rash and reckless as this.
Ghastly nodded.
That'll teach him to underestimate stupid people.
All right, then, Stephanie said. Just wanted to make sure we'd thought of everything. So let's go.
Without a word, the cleavers ran forward and jumped, legs tucked beneath them, and cleared the top of the wall and disappeared from view.
Show-offs,
Ghastly muttered, sweeping both hands down by his sides. A gust of wind lifted him and swung him up towards the wall. He grabbed on and pulled himself to the top. Tanith turned to Stephanie.
Want a boost? If you wouldn't mind.
Tanith crouched, interlocked her fingers, and Stephanie put one foot in her hands. On the count of three, Stephanie shot upwards. Tanith was strong, stronger than she looked, because Stephanie had no trouble catching the top of the wall. Ghastly helped her up, then dropped down the other side and turned to wait for her. She let herself hang down, then released her grip, and her boots crunched onto dried leaves and brittle twigs. A moment later, Tanith landed beside her. The woodland was thick, and as they moved deeper into it, it became darker. The evening sun had difficulty filtering through the tall trees, and it was cold enough to make Stephanie grateful for her coat. The cleavers didn't seem to make a sound as they walked. The woodland was quiet, quieter than it had any right to be. No birds sang. Nothing rustled in the undergrowth. It was an eerie sensation. They reached the tree line at the rear of the castle and ducked down. A small army of hollow men patrolled the grounds.
Oh, joy, Ghastly said grimly. How are we going to get by them?
We need a diversion, Tanith said.
Any suggestions?
Tanith didn't answer, but after a moment she looked at the cleavers. Ghastly understood immediately.
But there are too many,
he protested. Tanith's tone was flat but firm.
We don't have a choice.
The cleavers tilted their heads towards her, and after a moment they nodded. They stole back among the trees and were gone. Stephanie waited with Tanith and Ghastly.
They won't be able to hold them off for long,
Ghastly said.
Long enough for us to sneak in, Tanith said.
It's not what I meant. You've just sent them to their deaths.
She didn't look at him.
They'll do their jobs. We'll do ours. Do you want your friend back or not?
Ghastly didn't answer.
Look,
Stephanie said. The hollow men were moving fast, moving out of their field of vision.
Let's go, Tanith said.
They broke from the trees, sprinting across the wide open space towards the castle. Stephanie glanced to her right as she ran, saw the cleavers standing back to back in the distance as the hollow men closed in. They reached the castle. Tanith placed her hand flat on the lock and twisted her wrist. Stephanie heard the lock break within the door and Tanith pushed it open slowly. They crept in, closing the door behind them. They kept to the outer corridors, staying away from the cold heart of the castle. They found a stairway leading down and Tanith went first, sword in her right hand, scabbard in her left. Stephanie followed a few paces behind, and Ghastly came last. They reached the basement, although Stephanie thought that dungeon would probably be more accurate. Tanith held up her hand, and they stopped and watched a hollow man clump ahead of them and pass out of sight. They made their way forward. Tanith approached the first heavy iron door and put her ear against it. After a moment she pushed it open. The hinges groaned in protest, but the room was empty. Ghastly went to the next door, listened, and opened it. Again it was empty. Tanith glanced at Ghastly and they shared a look, and Stephanie knew what it was about.
We should split up,
Stephanie whispered.
No,
said Tanith.
No way,
said Ghastly.
If we waste time, the hollow men will be back outside the door and we won't be able to get away.
Then you come with me,
Ghastly whispered. Stephanie shook her head.
I'll be fine. I listen at the doors. If I hear anything, I'll get you. If I meet a bad guy, you can be pretty sure you'll know about it. We don't have a choice.
They looked at her but didn't argue. Tanith went to the next door. Ghastly hurried down the length of the corridor, and Stephanie turned back and rounded the corner. She came to another row of iron doors and listened intently at each one. She followed the maze of corridors wherever they took her. She found herself breathing through her mouth and tasted the foulness of the air on the back of her throat. There were puddles here, stagnant pools of water on the uneven stone floor. The doors were no longer made of iron, but of rotting wood. The flickering of the torches in the brackets made shadows dance on the walls. She saw someone moving ahead and was about to duck back when she recognized Ghastly. He waved to her, and she waved back and started checking the doors closest to her. They were working their way towards each other when Stephanie came to a door and heard a low whistling. She frowned. Could Skullduggery whistle? He could talk without lips or breath, so she couldn't see a reason why he wouldn't be able to whistle. She didn't recognize the tune, however. She motioned to Ghastly and he crept forward. After listening for a moment, he nodded.
"That's the girl from Ipanema,"
he whispered.
"That's him."
He held up three fingers, then two, then one, and they burst into the room. Skullduggery looked up and stopped whistling.
"Hello," he said. "I know where the key to the caves is."
Stephanie closed the door as Ghastly hurried around behind him, stooping to examine the shackles.
"Quality workmanship,"
he said.
"I thought you'd appreciate it. There's a binding spell woven into the metal."
"Nice. It'll take me a moment."
"I'm not going anywhere."
"Are you okay?" Stephanie asked.
"I've been treated well,"
he answered with a nod.
"Apart from all the torture. It's given me time to think, actually. I know where the key is."
"So you said." Ghastly stood and the shackles fell. Skullduggery got to his feet.
"Is Meritorious here?"
he asked.
"He's telling the other elders what's going on,"
Ghastly said.
"Ah," Skullduggery said. "So, you're doing this on your own?"
"Danith Lowe is here, but basically, yes."
Skullduggery shrugged.
"I must admit it's going rather fabulously so far."
"The key," Stephanie said. "You didn't tell Serpine where it is, did you?"
"I couldn't have, even if I'd have wanted to. Just worked it out a few minutes ago. Simple, really. It was right in front of us."
"We can talk about this later,"
Ghastly said.
"We have to go."
"Will there be fighting?"
"I hope not."
"I'm in the mood for some fighting."
"If there is," Stephanie said, handing him his gun, "here's something you can use."
"Ah, bless. I've missed her. Do you have bullets?"
No. Skullduggery paused.
"Excellent,"
he said, and tucked the gun away.
"Let's go,"
Ghastly said, and stepped out of the door. Stephanie and Skullduggery followed. They hurried down the corridor and turned a corner. A group of hollow men froze in mid-step and regarded them vacantly. Time stood still.
"Yes," Skullduggery said. "This is a fabulous rescue indeed."
The hollow men came at them, and Skullduggery and Ghastly went into action. Skullduggery worked with elbows and knees, wrist locks and arm locks. Ghastly deftly wove in and around attacks, firing out punches at whoever got close. Beyond the silent hollow men, Stephanie saw Tanith sprinting forward, and then she ran up the wall and across the ceiling and continued running upside down. Stephanie stared. She hadn't known Tanith could do that. From the ceiling, Tanith joined the attack, swinging the sword and slicing through the tops of heads. Within a matter of moments, the hollow men were reduced to tatters and a foul smell. Tanith jumped down, flipping to land on her feet. "There are more coming," she said, then added helpfully, "We should probably leave." They reached the stairs without encountering any more opposition, but as they were running for the exit, two massive doors were kicked open ahead and the hollow men reinforcements arrived. Skullduggery and Ghastly stepped up, clicking their fingers and hurling fireballs at the ground. Stephanie watched their hands move, manipulating the flames until there was a wall of fire keeping the hollow men back. Tanith turned to Stephanie.
"Coat! What?"
Without giving an explanation, Tanith gripped Stephanie's collar and pulled the coat off. She then ran for the window, covering her head with the coat, and jumped. She crashed through in an explosion of glass.
"Oh,"
Stephanie murmured. She ran over, climbing through the window as Tanith got to her feet.
"Thanks,"
Tanith said, handing her back the coat.
"Watch out!"
Ghastly shouted. Stephanie dodged to one side as Ghastly and Skullduggery dived through the window. Ghastly lower down, Skullduggery above him, like two lunatic acrobats. They hit the grass and rolled, coming up at the same time.
"Flee,"
Skullduggery said. As they ran for the trees, Stephanie saw one of the cleavers who had accompanied them. Judging by the tattered paper strewn around him, the cleavers had obviously put up an amazing fight, but the sheer numbers of hollow men had proven too much. He lay dead on the grass. She saw no sign of the other one. And then they were in the trees and not slowing down, and hollow men were crashing through the undergrowth after them. Ghastly reached the wall first, swept his hands beneath him, and let the air lift him over the wall. Tanith just kept running. Right before she was about to smack straight into it, she gave a little jump, and then she was running up the wall. Before Stephanie could ask Skullduggery for a boost, his arm wrapped around her waist, and she found herself rushing upwards, the wind in her ears, and the top of the wall passing beneath her feet. They landed on the other side with such ease and gentleness that Stephanie almost laughed despite herself. They got in the van, and Ghastly turned the key and pulled out onto the road, and they left the castle behind them. Chapter 18. On the Roof, at Night. Laughter drifted in the distance, and Skullduggery looked towards it. They were standing on the roof of Ghastly's shop. Dublin City twinkled as it got ready for sleep. Stephanie could see over rooftops, over streets, down lanes. She could see the cars passing, and here and there people walking. When he turned back, he said,
"So, Valkyrie Cain, eh?"
"You don't think it sounds silly, do you?"
"On the contrary, I think it sounds perfect. Valkyrie, warrior women who guide the souls of the dead off the battlefield. A tad morbid, but then who am I to judge? I am technically dead."
Stephanie looked at him and took a moment before speaking again.
"So was it bad? The torture?"
"It wasn't fun," he said. "I think after the first few hours he knew I had no idea where the key was. After that he was torturing me purely for the sake of torturing me. Did I thank you for coming to my rescue, by the way?"
"Don't worry about it."
"Nonsense. Thank you."
She smiled.
"You're welcome."
"Your friend Tanith seemed a bit quiet on the trip home."
"I think she regrets using the cleavers as a diversion."
"I would have made the same decision," Skullduggery said. "The cleavers have a job to do. Let them do it."
"That's what she said."
"Ah, but it's one thing to understand that and quite another to accept it. Until that happens, she's going to have one or two nightmares about it. But she's a warrior. She'll make it."
"She's a good fighter."
"Indeed she is."
"If I started training now, would I be able to fight like her when I'm her age?"
"I don't see why not. 60 years of good solid training is enough to turn anyone into a tidy little scrapper."
"What?"
"What what?"
60 years? How old is she?"
"I'd say 70 if she's a day."
Stephanie stared.
"Right," she said firmly. "It's time for you to tell me how you people live so long."
"Diet and exercise."
"Skullduggery."
"Clean, healthy living."
"I swear."
"Magic, then."
She looked at him.
"Do all sorcerers live forever?"
"Not forever, no. Not even close to forever. We do age, it's just we do it slower than the rest of humanity. The regular use of a certain amount of magic rejuvenates the body, keeps it young."
"So if I started learning magic now, I'd stay 12?
"It would take you a few years to reach the level where aging slows, but yes, after that you would stay young for a lot longer than is strictly fair. I know it's impolite to discuss a lady's age, but China is the same age as I am, and even I have to admit that she wears it better."
He laughed, then stopped and peered at her.
"Because I am a skeleton," he explained.
"Yes, I got it."
"You weren't laughing."
"I didn't think it was funny."
"Oh."
So what are you going to do about her?
China, there is nothing to do. She behaved exactly as I expected her to behave. The scorpion stings the fox because that is its nature. You can't deny your nature.
And what's your nature?
His head tilted. Odd question.
China said some things about you, and Serpine. She said all you want is revenge.
And you're wondering how far I'll go to get that revenge, is that it? You're wondering how much I'm willing to sacrifice in order to make him pay for killing me all those years ago.
Yes.
He paused a moment, then slipped his hands into his pockets and spoke. What China didn't tell you, what I didn't tell you, is that I was not the only one caught in Serpine's trap.
Stephanie didn't say anything. She waited for him to continue.
The trap was exquisite. A thing of beauty, it really was. You see, Valkyrie, a successful trap needs one important quality, the same quality any trick or illusion needs. Misdirection. When your attention is focused on one thing, something else is happening behind your back. I didn't even realize it was a trap until it was sprung. Serpine knew me, you see, and he knew how I'd react to certain stimuli. He knew, for instance, that if he murdered my wife and child right in front of me, I'd never even suspect that the handle of the dagger I reached for was dipped in poison.
Stephanie stared at him, but Skullduggery just looked out over the city.
I didn't use magic, you see. And he knew I wouldn't. He knew I'd be too angry. He knew my rage would fuel a physical attack, that I'd need to kill him up close and personal. And the moment my hand closed around that dagger, I realized my mistake. Of course, by then it was too late. I was helpless. It took him a few days to finally kill me. I died hating him, and when I came back, the hatred came back with me.
He turned his head to her.
You asked me what is my nature. It is a dark and twisted thing.
I don't know what to say, Stephanie said softly.
Not much you can say to a story like that, is there?
Not really.
Yep, I win on the old dramatic story front every time.
They stood in silence for a while. Despite the warmth of the night, it was chilly up there, but Stephanie didn't mind. What happens now? She asked.
The elders go to war. They'll find the castle empty. Serpine wouldn't stay there after this, so they'll be looking for him. They'll also be tracking down his old allies to make sure they don't get the opportunity to organize.
And what do?
We get to the scepter before Serpine.
The key, she said. Where is it?
He turned to her. Gordon hid it. Clever man, your uncle. He didn't think anyone should have access to that weapon. But he hid the key in a place where if we truly needed to find it, if the situation got so dire that we truly needed the scepter, all it would take was a little detective work.
So where is it?
The piece of advice he gave me in the solicitor's office. Do you remember what it was?
He said a storm is coming.
And he also said that sometimes the key to safe harbor is hidden from us and sometimes it is right before our eyes.
He was talking about the key, literally. It's right before our eyes.
It was, when those words were first spoken in the solicitor's office.
Fedric has the key.
Not Fedric. He gave it away.
Stephanie frowned, remembering the reading of the will, then the lock in the cellar, no bigger than Skullduggery's palm. She looked up at him. Not the brooch!
The brooch.
Gordon gave the key to the most powerful weapon in existence, to Fergus and Beryl, she asked incredulously. Why would he do that?
Would you ever have thought to look for it with them?
She let the notion sink in, then started to smile. They were left the most valuable possession Gordon had, and they didn't even realize it.
It's actually quite amusing.
It actually is.
So now all we have to do is get it.
Stephanie smiled again and nodded. Then her smile dropped and she shook her head vehemently. I'm not getting it!
You're going to have to.
No, I don't!
Just pay them a visit.
Why can't you break in? You broke into the vault.
That was different.
Yes, it had alarms and vampires. This would be so much easier.
There are times when extreme measures are unnecessary. Extreme measures are very necessary here.
Valkyrie.
You can't ask me to visit them.
We don't have a choice.
But I never visit. They'll suspect something.
Being a detective isn't all about torture and murder and monsters. Sometimes it gets truly unpleasant.
But I don't like them, she whined.
The fate of the world may depend on whether or not you can bring yourself to visit your relatives.
She turned her head, looking at him out of the corner of her eye.
It may depend?
Valkyrie.
Fine, I'll go.
Good girl.
She crossed her arms and didn't respond.
Are you sulking now?
He asked.
Yes,
she answered curtly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chapter 19. The Experiment. The cleaver lay strapped to the table. Fluids ran through the clear rubber tubes that pierced his skin, flowing into the quiet machine behind him. That which was unnecessary was removed, replaced with liquid darkness, with concoctions that mixed science with sorcery. The cleaver's face was unremarkable and expressionless. He had stopped struggling over an hour ago. It was beginning to take effect. Serpine stepped into the light and the cleaver's eyes flickered to him. They were glassy and dull, without any of the fierceness that had met his gaze when the Hollow Men had brought the cleaver to him and removed the helmet. Then, even as Skullduggery Pleasant made good his escape, Serpine had been given a new captive, and he knew what he would do with him. It was time. Serpine held up the dagger he was holding, let the cleaver see it. No reaction, no wariness, no fear, no recognition. This man, this soldier, who had lived his entire life with blind obedience to others, was now about to enter into death, equally as blind. A pathetic existence. Serpine held the dagger in both hands and raised it above his head, then brought it down, and the blade plunged into the cleaver's chest. And he died. Serpine removed the blade, wiped it clean, and put it to one side. If this worked, some changes would obviously need to be made. Some alterations, some improvements. The cleaver was a test subject after all, no more than an experiment. If it worked, a little refinement would be in order. It wouldn't take long, an hour at most. Serpine waited by the cleaver's corpse. The warehouse was quiet. He'd had to abandon the castle, but he had been well prepared for that eventuality. Besides, it wouldn't be for long. In a matter of days, his enemies would be dead, and there would be no one left to fight him, and he would have everything he would need to usher in the Faceless Ones, a feat his old master Mevolent had never managed. Serpine frowned. Had it been a trick of the light, or had the cleaver moved? He looked closer, searching for the rise and fall of the chest, searching for a sign of life. But no, no sign of life. The cleaver's pulse, when he checked it, was absent. And then the cleaver opened his eyes. Chapter 20. The Family Curse. Stephanie climbed through her bedroom window to find her reflection sitting on the bed in the darkness waiting for her.
Are you ready to resume your life?
It asked. Stephanie, who was finding it very disconcerting to hold a conversation with herself, merely nodded. The reflection went to the mirror and stepped through, then turned and waited. Stephanie touched the glass, and a day's worth of memory flooded into her mind. She watched the reflection change, the clothes Stephanie was wearing appearing on it, and then it was nothing more than a reflected image in a mirror. Stephanie woke the next morning, not happy with what she had to do. Dressed in jeans and t-shirt, she thought about calling on the reflection to imitate her again, then decided against it. The reflection gave her the creeps. Realizing she could not put it off any longer, Stephanie trudged over to her aunt's house and knocked on the door. The sun was shining and the birds were singing, and Stephanie forced a smile onto her face, but it wasn't a smile that was returned when the door opened, and Crystal looked out at her.
"What do you want?"
her cousin asked suspiciously.
"Just thought I'd call round,"
Stephanie said brightly.
"See how you all are?" "We're fine,"
Crystal said.
"We've got a stupid car and a stupid boat. How's your house?"
"Crystal," she said,
"I know you're probably angry about the inheritance and everything, but I don't know why I was left all that either." "It's because you were sucking up to him,"
Crystal sneered.
"If we'd have known that all it took was just to be all smiles and have conversations with him, then we'd have done that stuff too. But I didn't know. You cheated."
"I didn't cheat. You had an unfair advantage."
"How? How could I have even known he was going to die?"
"You knew,"
Crystal said.
"You knew that sooner or later he was going to die, but you got in so early the rest of us didn't stand a chance."
"Did you even like him?"
There was that sneer again.
"You don't have to like someone to get something from them."
Stephanie resisted the urge to punch Crystal's smirking face long enough for Beryl to pass the doorway. She saw Stephanie, and her eyes widened in surprise.
"Stephanie,"
she said,
"what are you doing here?"
"She thought she'd call round,"
Crystal said,
"to see how we are."
"Oh, that's very nice of you, dear."
Crystal took this opportunity to walk away without saying